the spring of 1976, June to be exact, the of some not very young congressman election year advent of a Democrat of a Watergate complex restaurant charges of one of the most powerful men in the Ohio's Wayne Hayes at first denied.
Although the charges against me, I am confident the proper time and then the proper faith will be shown to be.
Hayes then admitted to lying about their the Democratic Congressional Committee campaigns. Since added that he resigned from his powerful post of everything from paper clips to house made public this letter.
Dear Mr. Switch, have been made against me and to devote the time necessary in committee. I am confident that I will be vindicated. I shall ask for a reexamination.
From Congress.
Congressman Hayes has.
Would he run for reelection? Hospital, unconscious from an overdose suicide attempt.
Well, I'm late and I was Dalmaine and two, and I took two and I couldn't burn. I still couldn't sleep and I thought I took two. I may have taken three. But
news came from Salt Lake City that you've been charged with soliciting sex from two. But when tried in a city court, action.
Well, of course, you expect that two cases can go. Nothing is a surprise and a loss appointed.
He's disciplined for a second time by a state court. There were other scandals. And four officers of the Marubeni Airways were arrested in connection with the. June was also marked by the Dargate fame. Former P8, Dame Sybil Thorndike, 93. And at 103, Adolf Zukor, the first man ever to produce a feature-length motion picture. Another man, said to be the world's richest, J. Hughes, there was no doubt about his leaving a will. Violent death was the lot of some 200 people in rioting in South Africa, and of thousands in Lebanon as Syria sent in an estimated 14,000 troops to try to enforce peace. And the United States Navy began evacuation activities from Beirut. Two Americans were killed there, Ambassador Francis Molloy, and Economic Counselor Robert Waring. President Ford paid tribute.
These men were on their way to meet with President-elect Sarkis. They were on a mission of peace, seeking to do what they could in the service of their country to help restore order, stability, and reason to Lebanon. Their deaths add another tragedy to the suffering which the Lebanese people have endured beyond measure.
Tragedy struck in Idaho, too, when 80 billion gallons of water burst through the Teton Dam, killing or injuring over 1,000 people, causing $1 billion in damage. An eyewitness account.
I watched a house floating down the channel, went 1 mile in 3 minutes. We timed it. 1 mile in 3 minutes. A full brick house just floating right down the channel. And this wall of water came in. It just, houses and things, you know, just collapsed in front of them. It just uprooted trees.
Two, there was anticipation of death. Karen Ann Quinlan was moved from the hospital with its life-supporting equipment into a nursing home. Death was anticipated momentarily. In Angola, American mercenary Daniel Gerhardt was condemned to be executed, but it was expected his sentence would be commuted. The month ended with the news that 256 passengers of an Air France plane had been hijacked to Uganda. July, of course, was the month of America's biggest birthday party. Sailing ships staged a stately parade up and down the Hudson River, while President Ford rang the ship's bell on the USS Forrestal. The national celebration began with a flag raising at dawn in Maine and ended at sunset, almost a day later, in American Samoa. Radio and television covered events and speeches in every corner of the country. And that night, the skies, ablaze with fireworks, celebrated 200 years of American independence. An airline pilot said,
there were displays of fireworks all the way from New York, and that includes the New York airport area, all the way down to Washington. You could see fireworks going off all over the place, particularly in all the larger cities like Philadelphia and Trenton and Baltimore and so forth. But the most effective display that we saw all evening was the one at Washington, and probably because we got a better look at it than any of the rest, you know.
On July 4th, Israel, too, was celebrating freedom of a different sort. A week before, six Palestinian terrorists had forced a Tel Aviv-Paris flight to fly from Athens to Entebbe Airport, where they'd been warmly greeted by Ugandan troops who took over the job of guarding the hostages until dictator Idi Amin arrived to take charge. Demands were made that some 53 Palestinians serving prison sentences in five countries be released. Failing that, the plane and all the hostages would be blown up. Israel, holding 40 of the prisoners, agreed to negotiate. The skyjackers released all but those hostages who were Israelis or to them seemed Jewish. Then, under the cover of darkness, on July 3rd, Israel sent a fleet of planes to the rescue. Some commandos destroyed grounded Ugandan MiGs and put the Entebbe control tower out of commission, while others attacked the building where the hostages were being held. the Israeli chief of staff, Mordechai Gur, described the raid.
And it took, as I said before, only a few seconds before the first people get very close to the building. And as a matter of fact, the battle inside the building did not take more than 1 minute, something like 45 seconds. And in that time, our people succeeded to kill four of the terrorists who were inside that room.
In all, seven terrorists were killed, as were some 20 Ugandan troops, three hostages and one Israeli commander. The remaining hostages were flown to Tel Aviv, said one American hostage.
We did think we were going to get out, but not that way. They told us that there was an agreement coming, and it was only a matter of days, and we had to wait for our government. So we waited. It was the longest week of my life.
Hundreds of cheering Israelis greeted the rescue party, among them Defense Minister Shimon Peres.
I'm very proud and very happy. I'm proud about the army. I'm happy about our nation.
One hostage with a British passport, Dora Block, did not get out. She was reportedly murdered in a hospital on the orders of a raging Idi Amin, who also reportedly ordered the four Entebbe control tower operators killed. Later, Amin accused the Israelis of using nuclear grenades, which put his troops to sleep.
If it was really not a chemical hand grenade, nuclear, which they throw to the soldier, which make soldier asleep, like a person who is going to operational theater, and while themselves were wearing the, you know, the gas mask, I think they could not have left Entebbe. But it is because of the chemical hand grenade they throw to the soldier, and that gave them a chance to escape.
The British broke off relations with Uganda. Meanwhile, in the UN, African nations wanted to condemn the Israeli action, while the United States wanted to condemn the hijacking. Both efforts failed, and Deputy U.S. Ambassador Tapley Bennett spoke sadly.
The United States very much regrets that this council did not take positive action against the criminal act of hijacking committed last week against the Air France aircraft and its passengers. We believe that the resolution, which we co-sponsored with the United Kingdom, was a balanced attempt at recording this council's determined opposition to hijacking, as well as its respect for the sovereignty and territorial integrity of states and its concern for the loss of human life in this tragic incident.
News of another death came from Africa, as noted by a Kissinger statement read by a State Department spokesman.
I have learned with a deep sense of shock that the Angolan authorities have executed Daniel Gearhart, despite the numerous pleas for clemency in his case that it had received from the United States, other governments, international organizations, and individuals. As I said in my press conference this morning, there is absolutely no basis in national or international law for the action now taken by the Angolan authorities.
Two ladies made news at the White House. Queen Elizabeth of Great Britain, paying a bicentennial visit to the United States, had dinner there.
Mr. President, the British and American people are as close today as two peoples have ever been. We see you as our strong and trusted friend, and we believe that you, in turn, will find us as ready as ever to bear our full share in defending the values in which we both believe.
And former child star, Shirley Temple Black, was given a new job.
Mr. President, it's a high honor indeed that you've bestowed upon me. It's a great honor to be the first woman chief of protocol for the United States of America. I don't know why, Mr. President, it took 200 years for one of us to get the job, but I'll do all my very best work to try to fill all the various assorted sizes of shoes of the distinguished men who have been chief of protocol.
Two blows struck former President Richard Nixon on the same day. He was disbarred from the practice of law in New York, and Pat Nixon was rushed to the hospital suffering from a stroke. Her recovery went well.
All the members of the family are worried. I would say that today, as distinguished from the first day and the second day, that we are, of course, still worried. She still has a very hard battle ahead. But what is more encouraging today is, first, that the situation is stabilized. It is not getting worse. And second, that as far as her own spirit is concerned, that she's coming back fast.
Suspense filled the last half of July, here on Earth and in space. 26 children between the ages of 6 and 14 and a bus driver disappeared in the California farming community of Chowchilla. The empty bus was located quickly, but it wasn't until some 16 hours later that the children were found in a quarry 100 miles away. They'd been buried in an old moving van, but had succeeded in digging their way out along with the driver, who had this to say.
About 7 o'clock, we got dug out. We handed all the kids up. I handed the kids up to the other boys, and we got out. And just lucky enough, there was a gravel pit right just within 200 feet of us, and the man over there, so jumped him, told him what happened. Well, he said, I heard that on the news, so he went and called the sheriff.
Shortly, three young men, all sons of rich families, were arrested. It was reported that they were going to ask $5 million in ransom. In space, a billion-dollar gamble provided suspense. Viking 1 was about to finish its 11th-month trip by landing on Mars. Would it land safely? And what would it find there? Science writer Isaac Asimov speculated.
After taking pictures immediately around the probe itself, they're going to scan the horizon. One of the reasons they're going to scan the horizon is just in case there are life forms large enough to see. I think that's too much to hope for, you understand. But I think I'll turn a back somersault if they see something.
7 years to the day after man first walked on the moon, Viking 1 landed safely. It found the planet was indeed red because there was some atmosphere, and it also reported a possibility of chemical activity in the soil it analyzed. There was, however, no welcoming committee. 2 continued to be the operative number in July. Earlier in the month, it was reported that an earthquake hit New Guinea, killing hundreds of people. The month ended with a second quake hitting China, near Peking. In California, Dr. Barry Rally studied the quake.
The city of Tangshan, of about 1 million people, is closest to the epicenter. If the earthquake is really magnitude 8.2, Tangshan itself might have suffered damage as great as 80 to 90% of the structures damage beyond repair or collapsed. There won't be any casualty figures available, but if the earthquake was not predicted and people were not out of their houses, I would judge that casualties greater than 100,000 would be not at all unreasonable.
In Cheatsin, American businessman Kenneth McGuire had a closer view of the quake.
I was first awakened by some rocking motions in the room, and when I was fully awake, of course, I realized immediately what was going on, and by that time, the intensity of the rocking had picked up. And looking out the window to see what was going on, there were flashes in the sky, such as heat lightning. By this time, the entire silhouettes of all of the buildings were shaking. The room had been shaking violently. Of course, the level of noise had started off at a fairly modest level, with lamps and things such as that falling to the floor, but as the intensity of the shaking increased, there's many additional noises, and finally the intensity of the noise became very, very great.
China was then hit again by China Quake number 2, and August began with warnings there might be still more to come. And the month began with a disaster here in the United States. A radio station manager in Loveland, Colorado, was an eyewitness.
Last night at about 8 o'clock, 6 to a 10-inch downpour of rain in the Estes Park area created a flash flood that roared down the Big Thompson Canyon, a canyon immediately west of Loveland, Colorado, in which there are a great many residents. The flash flood came with very little warning. The sheriff's deputies of Larimer County were going from house to house up and down the canyon, warning people to evacuate quickly. It is obvious by now that many people were trapped in the canyon. Bridges were washed out as a wall of water came down. Helicopters, 6 helicopters, military and civilian, are flying rescue missions into the Big Thompson Canyon. They're bringing out the injured first and other survivors. The fatalities, some of them have already washed up where the water has receded, are being set aside and marked by locations. They're not even bringing out the fatalities yet, as they're more concerned with the survivors.
While there were over 100 known dead, the exact toll may never be known. In 6 hours, as much rain fell as usually falls in a year. Although the river was normally only about 18 inches deep, in some places the wall of water in the canyon was 30 feet deep. Meanwhile, death was visiting Pennsylvania in a less dramatic but equally frightening way. Late in July, there had been a state American Legion convention in Philadelphia. By early August, it had become apparent that a large number of the conventioneers had been hospitalized with the same symptoms of some unknown ailment: headaches, chest pains, high fevers, and lung congestion. 11 had died. Federal and state health authorities began an intensive campaign to diagnose the Legionnaires' disease. One of those was Dr. Dennis Lucy.
Individuals who have symptoms are going through routine hospital admission studies, chest x-rays, blood counts, urinalyses. Blood is being drawn for serologic testing, testing for antibodies, in an effort to find out if it is viral, if it is bacterial, if it is viral, what sort of viral problem. In those cases in which death has occurred, we're asking that a section of lung tissue be preserved.
Besides germs and viruses, bird droppings, nickel carbonyl, and secret chemical warfare gases were suggested as causes, but there was no proof. After over 150 cases with almost 30 fatalities had been reported, the Legionnaires' disease just seemed to disappear. Meanwhile, President Ford's program for universal immunization had bogged down because, among other problems, insurance companies refused to insure the serum producers. A bill went before Congress providing for federal insurance. That bill bogged down too, said President Ford.
The threat of swine flu outbreak this year is still very, very genuine. Data from the scientific community clearly supports the need for a full-scale inoculation program. Clinical tests conducted to date clearly demonstrate that the vaccine is both safe and effective. There is no excuse to let the legislative program that I proposed 7 weeks ago, a program that could safeguard the lives of many, many Americans, be delayed any longer.
No connection between the Legionnaires' disease and swine flu was made, but spurred by the events in Pennsylvania, Congress passed the swine flu legislation. Meanwhile, death and violence were the order around the world. Guerrilla warfare in Rhodesia, civil war in Lebanon, up to 8,000 deaths reported in a Philippine earthquake. And in Soweto, a township in South Africa, 35 to 45 persons were killed in a racial uprising caused by detention of persons from earlier riots. It marked the beginning of many race riots for the month. And there was trouble in Korea.
We consider the killing of the two American officers a wanton act of murder.
What Kissinger called wanton murder occurred when a party of U.S. and South Korean soldiers tried to trim a tree in the demilitarized zone. They were attacked by axe-wielding North Korean soldiers who killed two American officers and wounded 9 others of the party. There were military alerts and threats of military action, but what was seen as almost an apology from North Korea calmed things down. International scandals continued. A former Japanese prime minister, Kakui Tanaka, was arrested on bribery charges, and Holland's Prince Bernhard resigned all his official posts, both in connection with the multinational Lockheed bribery investigations. September brought Mars back into the news. Viking 2 landed, as described by project manager James Martin for President Ford.
We are sitting on a plane that is called Utopia. Let me say that I had been promised when I selected this landing site that we would see a lot of sand dunes, and perhaps we're seeing a lot of sand dunes, but they are now covered with rocks.
I see.
We have very superb pictures, beautiful pictures, very sharp, very clear, but there are an awful lot of rocks.
Flight news of a different sort came when 5 hijackers took over a New York-Chicago TWA jet and forced it to go to Paris. They said they were demonstrating for the freedom of Croatia from Yugoslavia and directed New York police to a locker in Grand Central Station. They demanded that a written appeal to the American people found there be published in major newspapers. This was done. Also found in the locker was a homemade bomb, which went off, killing one policeman and wounding 3 others. This gave credence to the hijackers' claim of having bombs on the plane. And when French authorities refused to let the plane take off, they threatened to blow up the hostages. Said one of those later,
there was a priest on board. Now, I don't know.
Bishop O'Rourke.
Bishop O'Rourke. Well, unfortunately, the bishop made a very bad mistake of getting on the loudspeaker and giving general confession to everybody and giving us all the last rites. When he did that, panic set in.
At what point was this?
Oh,
On the ground?
On the ground, we were on the ground in Paris.
But they had not threatened us that they were pull bomb on us or anything. He got on and said there's a crisis, and then he told us, and he said it does not look good for us. And with that, people started crying.
Shortly, however, the hijackers surrendered, and it was found they had no weapons, no bombs. September also brought back into the news the leaked CIA report when CBS newsman Daniel Shore was called before the House Ethics Committee. Shore finished his prepared statement with this.
And if you'll permit me one last personal word, beyond all this constitutional argument, I would like to say, beyond all of this, to betray a source would be for me to betray myself, my career, and my life. And to say that I refuse to do it isn't quite saying it right. I cannot do it.
Despite Shore's continued refusal to name his source, the House decided to take no action against him. Shore and CBS did, however, agree to part company. As the autumn began, the world seemed to be concentrating on politics. In Italy, the Christian Democrats were trying to stabilize despite their narrow victory over the communists. Spain was trying to edge toward democracy. The Western communist parties were declaring their freedom from Russian domination. In Sweden, after 40 years in office, the Social Democrats were defeated. Japan and Canada were preparing for important elections, and leadership struggles of very differing sorts were looming in two of the world's great powers. From China came news of the death of Chairman Mao Zedong at age 82. President Ford spoke of this.
Chairman Mao was a giant figure in modern Chinese history. He was a leader whose actions profoundly affected the development of his own country. His influence on history will extend far beyond the borders of China.
Ambassador David Bruce, the first head of the U.S. legation in Peking, spoke of succession.
Succession is something which people have, of course, anticipated for some time. But the natural successor would have been Zhou Enlai, but of course he's been dead for a while. And a lot of observers, particularly from Hong Kong, talk about there being violent ructions and whatnot. I doubt it very much. I think you have a period of peaceful change.
But there were other less sanguine predictions, too. And there was wonder about who it would be that would have to deal as President of the United States with the new leadership in China. The fourth quarter of the election year 1976 had none of the euphoria evident on the 4th of July, bicentennial year 1976. While economic indicators were mixed, Wall Street lost much of its early year gains in the first weeks of October. Depending on the analyst, this was known either as the Ford or Carter bear market. Others blame the $105 billion paper loss and the fact that people knew one of them had to win. Even the end of the 21-day auto strike did nothing to stop the Dow Jones Industrials from going down 50 points in eight sessions. Then, too, there were government economic statistics released in October, which painted a picture of lagging economy, still plagued by high unemployment and inflation. The Labor Department disclosed that unemployment had eased slightly in September from 7.9%. But the total number of jobs had also declined. While the United States pondered its leadership choices, the West Germans narrowly kept Helmut Schmidt as chancellor. But after bloody riots, Thailand's democratic government fell to a military coup. And there were rumors of riots in China, where Hua Kuofeng had replaced Mao Zedong. Wall posters indicated that Mao's widow, Chiang Ching, and three other running dogs were in trouble. What happened to them? One possible answer from American businessman Robert Hirschberg in Hong Kong.
The statement given out here was that the London Daily Telegraph reporter from Peking reported to London that these people had not been seen since the 30th of September at a public affair marking the eve of the Chinese National Day. And since there was a delegation from Ghana in Peking, and all of the dignitaries except for these people were on public view, it led to the rumor of their arrest.
It seems the lady was accused of tampering with the words of Mao and nagging him on his deathbed. Death touched much of the news here, too. California passed the nation's first right-to-die law, designed to help the terminally ill to a death with dignity. Dr. Mildred Jefferson, the president of the National Right to Life Committee, didn't like it.
With Governor Brown signing the Natural Death Act in California, we will have the same kind of effect that the loosened abortion laws had in striking down the rest of the laws back when California loosened its law in 1969. Although Governor Brown is a bachelor, he will become known as the father of euthanasia, because those who are pushing for such legislation will use the California example to try to convince other state legislatures across the country to enter into the death selection business.
Later, the Right to Life movement suffered another setback when a federal court ruled that Medicaid had to pay for abortion on demand.